Hello and welcome to The Music and the Movies, a program that looks at and listens to the sweet spot where music and movies intersect. In this hour, we ponder the special alchemy that happens when sound meets image, where music lovers and cinephiles come together. We explore a different theme in each episode, arranged around an idea or a person, and we delve into why some of our favorite movie moments are also musical ones. My name is Robert Horton. I'm a movie critic and historian and a member of the National Society of Film Critics. I'll play some music and talk about it in an attempt to get to the bottom of a lifelong fascination with why film is so especially intoxicating when music is involved. And at the end of each show, I'll round things off with the trailer, a particular cut that either didn't fit into the overall flow or has some special meaning to me or just so weird it deserves its own spot. So join us, won't you, for The Music and the Movies. Today's episode, Edgar Allan Poe. Among the most frequently adapted authors for movies, Poe has the distinction of being credited on movies that aren't even remotely connected to his stories, which is some kind of box office clout, I guess. Today, we will listen to the music that has enhanced some of these films, including stories in which Poe appears as a character. You might be understandably conjuring up the presence of Vincent Price in various Poe-related stories, and we will hear from some of those for sure, and we'll also range through some creative European takes on these tales of mystery and imagination. Then for our trailer at the end of the show, we'll hear a voice that has intersected with Edgar Allan Poe at various junctures in film history. Edgar Allan Poe lived from 1809 to 1849, a distance from our time that speaks strongly of the appeal of his stories and also of the enduring power of horror movies, which is how Poe's work has generally found its way into movie theaters. The occasional exceptions for his great detective work in The Murders in the Rue Morgue. His stories were adapted during the silent era, which doesn't help us much in our purpose here today, but suggests how well Poe's stories would play even when robbed of their language. D.W. Griffith made a short film called Edgar Allan Poe, a fictionalized incident involving a raven, in 1909, the centenary of Poe's birth. But we're going to begin pretty early in the sound era with an unusual sequence from an unusual movie, The Black Cat, released in 1934. Universal Pictures was trying to squeeze more juice out of the horror movie craze they'd initiated with Dracula and Frankenstein and The Mummy. So why not put the two great stars of 30s horror, Boris Karloff and Bela Lugosi, in a property only tangentially based on the Poe story? They play an architect and a psychiatrist, respectively, who were involved in the same World War I battle on the very spot where Karloff's mansion is now. The director was an up-and-comer named Edgar Ulmer, one of the many filmmakers arriving in Hollywood from Europe during this time, and Ulmer brought an amazing Bauhaus look to the movie. He also decided to use almost wall-to-wall classical music on the soundtrack. He had the music director, Heinz Romheld, stack the film with Tchaikovsky and Chopin and Liszt and so on. One amazing sequence in the film unfolds to a snippet of Beethoven's Seventh Symphony. After some horrifying revelations about Karloff, in which he is exposed not only as a war criminal, but also as a sort of madman who keeps the corpse of Lugosi's wife in his dungeon. Lugosi has just been frightened by a black cat as this sequence begins. So there's the Poe connection, somewhat justified. He has a phobia about them, which is really the least of his problems at this point. And then Karloff launches into this monologue, which is unusually frank about the soul-destroying nature of the First World War, but the sequence is also very unusual for its visual treatment, which roams around the mansion as though we're looking through Karloff's eyes. Here's what that sequence sounds like, a curious moment from the 1934 film The Black Cat.
Come, Vitus. Are we men or are we children? Of what use are all these melodramatic gestures? You say your soul was killed, that you have been dead all these years. And what of me? Did we not both die here in Marmaris 15 years ago? Are we any the less victims of the war than those whose bodies were torn asunder? Are we not both the living dead? And now you come to me, playing at being an avenging angel, childishly thirsting for my blood. We understand each other too well. We know too much of life. We shall play a little game, Venus. A game of death, if you like. But under any circumstances, we shall have to wait until these people are gone, until we are alone. Until tomorrow.
That excerpt is from The Black Cat, released in 1934, a little bit of the second movement of Beethoven's Seventh Symphony, arranged for the film by Heinz Romheld. That Beethoven has turned up in many film soundtracks over the years, very hard for it not to be effective. The Black Cat was a big hit in 1934 and should have launched the director Edgar Ulmer into bigger and better things, but the persistent rumor about him is that his affair with the wife of a Universal executive, who also happened to be the nephew of the studio chief, killed his chances, and he spent the rest of his quite interesting career in low-budget Poverty Row movies, and also married to the lady in question, by the way. Well, there you have Edgar Allan Poe, associated with two of the biggest stars of horror cinema. We might as well add another one, Vincent Price, who began a very profitable partnership with the low-budget producer-director Roger Corman in 1960 with House of Usher, an adaptation of Poe's The Fall of the House of Usher. This ushered in an era of collaboration between director and actor that would lean heavily on Poe titles, even if the movies were not always too faithful to the writing of Edgar Allan Poe. Some of the scores were by Les Baxter, prominent figure in what we now call lounge music, especially of the exotica variety. Baxter did the music for House of Usher, The Pit and the Pendulum, Tales of Terror, and The Raven. The last one was actually kind of a send-up of the whole series. Corman and his writer, Richard Matheson, really said they needed to loosen things up at that point to keep their interest alive in the series. Low in budget, but high in gothic production design and elaborate costuming. There's a lot of plunging necklines in these movies. And with Vincent Price looming over all as a stylish and grandiloquent figure of dread, these films not only caught on at the box office, they even got some good reviews at the time. Let's start off with a couple of Les Baxter contributions to the series. First, we'll hear the end title music from The Pit and the Pendulum, 1961, which I think you'll hear has just a little bit of lounge music energy going on, along with The Menace. Then another end title cue from Tales of Terror, 1962. That's an anthology of Poe stories, namely Morella, The Black Cat, and The Case of Monsieur Valdemar, in which Vincent Price is joined by Peter Lorre and Boris Karloff.
Thank you.
two musical cues there, both composed by Les Baxter for a couple of Roger Corman's Edgar Allan Poe adaptations. You just heard something from Tales of Terror, sounding a little like a mishmash of every kind of horror movie music element there. And before that, music from The Pit and the Pendulum. You're listening to The Music in the Movies. I'm Robert Horton, listening to music from films adapted from the work of Edgar Allan Poe. By consensus, I think the apex of the Roger Corman Poe films is The Mask of the Red Death from 1964. Here, Vincent Price plays Prince Prospero, who parties it up in his castle while the peasants are dying outside of the plague. This is a sumptuous, incredibly stylish film, beautifully photographed by the future director Nicholas Roeg, with a strong supporting cast, including Jane Asher, who during filming was just starting to date the boyfriend she'd have through most of the 60s, a fellow named Paul McCartney, who did visit the set, apparently, but was not asked to contribute anything musically. Instead, the score was composed by David Lee, an English jazz pianist turned composer. Here are a couple of mood-setting cues for his Mask of the Red Death score, a short cue called Francesca. That's the character Pure of Soul, played by Jane Asher, and then Prospero and the Red Death, which conjures up the main character's impure soul.
Thank you.
from the best of the Roger Corman films adapted from Edgar Allan Poe. That is music composed by David Lee for The Mask of the Red Death. Lee had a varied career that included performing some music and appearing with his jazz combo on screen for some episodes of The Avengers back in the 60s, as well as writing a couple of novelty hits for Peter Sellers. One of the most distinctive of this Poe series was Roger Corman's final effort with Vincent Price, The Tomb of Ligeia, written by Robert Towne, who would win an Oscar for writing Chinatown a decade later. As Corman pointed out, this one was not bound by claustrophobic studio interiors, but shot in real locations and frequently outdoors, as Price's moody widower meets a woman with an uncanny resemblance to his dead wife. The opening music by Kenneth V. Jones sets the doomy romantic tone for this film. Music from the 1964 film Tomb of Ligeia, composed by Kenneth V. Jones, the final Edgar Allan Poe picture from director Roger Corman and actor Vincent Price. That film, like The Mask of the Red Death, was shot in England, and Vincent Price stuck around for another film, sort of but not really, based on Poe, also shot in England, the 1968 film Witchfinder General, which is about the appalling real-life witch hunter Matthew Hopkins. To give the movie the Poe connection, its U.S. distributor retitled it The Conqueror Worm, after one of Poe's poems, which is a bit of flim-flam that can be forgiven, I think, because the resulting movie is so strong. Here are a couple of cues from the score by Paul Ferris, a brief piece called The Jail, and then a more lyrical section of music titled Soft Interlude. Thank you. Music from the 1968 film Witchfinder General, also known as The Conqueror Worm, composed by Paul Ferris. Vincent Price did not get along with the director of this film, Michael Reeves, who had wanted Donald Pleasence for the role and let Price know about that. Yet, the film has one of the most powerful performances Vincent Price ever gave. If most of these Vincent Price Poe adaptations are, you know, big and a little scary and kind of silly and overall just good fun, Witchfinder General is not fun. Not fun at all. It's violent and disturbing, and as I once wrote about the film, it explicitly links paranoia and witch hunting to misogyny and how female sexual energy is seen by the ruling order as a threat. The final sequence is perhaps the most harrowing fade-out of any 60s horror picture and offers no comforting resolution. Its director was all of 25 years old, and dead just a few months after the film's release from a drug overdose. You're listening to The Music of the Movies. I'm Robert Horton, listening today to music from Edgar Allan Poe films. Well, the Europeans, you know, appreciated the genius of Edgar Allan Poe before his fellow Americans did, and we will hear from some European adaptations of Poe's work now, beyond England, that is. In 1968, the film Spirits of the Dead combined three Poe stories, each directed by a famous filmmaker, Louis Malle, Roger Vadim, and Federico Fellini. We will now focus on Fellini's effort because it's by far the best segment, and it also gives us Fellini's favorite composer, Nino Rota. The segment is called Toby Dammit, that's the name of the main character, and it's based on the Poe story, Never Bet the Devil Your Head. It stars Terence Stamp as a movie actor who comes to Rome and is assailed both by the excesses of the showbiz world and by a demon in the form of a child. Here are three cues from Nino Rota's score. We begin with the Toby Dammit theme. Then you're going to hear the demon child theme very briefly. And then we return to Toby's theme, but this time with the melody of a familiar pop tune, which also plays a role in the movie, woven into the piece. I will explain when we return. Thank you. That's Three Cues from the score of Toby Dammit, a segment from the film Spirits of the Dead, composed by Nino Rota. In that last piece, you could hear the variation on the Toby Dammit theme being joined by the melody from Ruby, probably best known as a hit for Ray Charles, a melody that was first introduced as part of a movie soundtrack. It was in the film Ruby Gentry, composed by Heinz Romheld. Remember, we mentioned him earlier as the music supervisor of The Black Cat back in the 1930s. Film history is rife with these kinds of connections. And by the way, Les Baxter had his own lounge music version of Ruby in the early 50s. But let's get back to Edgar Allan Poe. The Ray Charles song does figure in Fellini's Toby Dammit, and it's really quite memorable in the film. The lyric by Mitchell Parrish repeats the idea that the subject of the song is like a dream, which not only suits Fellini's phantasmagorical purposes, but also Edgar Allan Poe's. After all, Poe is the one who asked us all, "Is all that we see or seem but a dream within a dream?" Toby Dammit is 45 minutes long, and it somehow fits the spirit of Poe, even though it seems well removed from its source. By the way, I once interviewed Terrence Stamp, who is really terrific in the film as the debauched, totally out of it movie star. And he told me this story about arriving on the set of the movie in Rome. And he asked Fellini for advice on how to play the role. And Fellini launched into this profane description of the kind of completely depraved orgy that this actor that Stamp was playing would have attended the night before this scene, and other things that decency prevents me from describing here and on the radio, which would then be followed by the actor dropping acid just before the cameras rolled. Great advice for an actor, and you'll see some of that in Stamp's performance in this movie. There were less prestigious Edgar Allan Poe adaptations in Europe at this time. For instance, 1964 film called La Danza Macabra, retitled Castle of Blood for export, a movie that actually has Edgar Allan Poe as a character in the story, even though the movie's only tangentially connected to any actual Edgar Allan Poe tale. But that's okay. It does have a plot about a man who takes a dare to spend a night in a haunted castle, and it has the American cult actress Barbara Steele, and it has music by Riz Ortolani, an amazingly prolific Italian composer who worked in European and Hollywood cinema and became famous when his composition More, which was written for the movie Mondo Cane, became a Grammy-winning worldwide hit in the early 60s. His music has also been sampled by Quentin Tarantino for his soundtracks. Here's a cue from La Danza Macabra, and it has some excellent qualities for low-budget horror movie soundtracking, including the use of a spooky harpsichord and that beloved electronic instrument, the theremin.
Thank you.
Music from the film La Danza Macabra, or Castle of Blood, if you prefer. Composed by the prolific Riz Ortolani. Also from Italy, we've got a 1963 film simply titled Horror, although again retitled for American consumption, of course, this time as The Blancheville Monster, and again only loosely inspired by Poe. Still, the music is creepy by Carlo Franci and Giuseppe Piccillo, as this excerpt will suggest. Music from an Italian film that purported to be based on Edgar Allan Poe's stories, titled simply Horror, with music by Carlo Franci and Giuseppe Piccillo. You are listening to The Music in the Movies. I'm Robert Horton. We're listening to music from films based on Edgar Allan Poe's stories. Finally, to round out this European selection of Poe films, we have the 1967 West German production called Die Schlangengrube und das Pendel, which, unless I miss my guess, translates as The Snake Pit and the Pendulum. But this one really had some excellent retitlings, including Blood Demon, but also The Torture Chamber of Dr. Sadism for U.S. distribution. A good title for a drive-in movie, though raising the question of why someone with the last name Sadism would go into the medical profession. That strikes me as a mistake right there. Just change your name. Anyway, whatever this movie is called, it has some fiendish music by Peter Tomas. Here, a cue titled Schloss Andomai, which you'll hear shifts halfway through from conventional horror movie music to some sound effects that would not be out of place in a Poe story. Music by Peter Tomas from a West German adaptation of Edgar Allan Poe, known by many titles, including The Torture Chamber of Dr. Sadism. All right, we're going to jump ahead to more recent examples of Poe in the movies now, starting with a curiously old-fashioned adaptation from 2014 called Stonehurst Asylum, based on the Poe story The System of Dr. Tarr and Professor Feather. Some good actors, including Michael Caine and Ben Kingsley, are mixed into this tale set inside an asylum, which features a robust score by John Debney. Here's a cue titled Seeing the Asylum from Stonehurst Asylum. Mood music there from the film Stonehurst Asylum, composed by John Debney, a hardworking veteran, perhaps most famous for his score for The Passion of the Christ. One recent attempt at the omnibus structure of using Poe stories was the 2013 film Extraordinary Tales, which treated five Poe stories in animated form. The Telltale Heart, The Fall of the House of Usher, The Pit and the Pendulum, The Mask of the Red Death, and The Case of Monsieur Valdemar. The Spanish animator Raul Garcia provided lush visual treatment for each story. Didn't skip on the music either, as you will hear in this selection by the composer Sergio de la Puente, which is titled The Pendulum.
Thank you.
music from the 2013 animated film Extraordinary Tales, composed by Sergio de la Puente. That film, a compendium of Edgar Allan Poe stories. Each segment is narrated by a notable figure, such as Christopher Lee, Julian Sands, the filmmaker Guillermo del Toro, and for a couple of lines, Roger Corman. And that leads us to... Yes, it's our trailer music, where we will nod in the direction of another of the narrators in this film, Extraordinary Tales, this time using audio that was recorded decades before the film's release, by Bela Lugosi. Who could barnstorm around doing dramatic readings of Poe when the movie roles weren't coming often enough? Here's Lugosi's voice in that film, originally recorded in the 1950s, launching us into The Telltale Heart.
It is impossible to say how first the idea entered my brain, but once conceived, it haunted me day and night. Object? There was none. For I loved the old man. He had never wronged me, he had never given me insult, and for his money, I had no desire. I think it was his eye. Yes, that was it. One of his eyes resembled that of a vulture. I made up my mind to take the life of the old man, and thus rid myself of the eye forever.
And so Bela Lugosi is off and running with a reading of Edgar Allan Poe's The Telltale Heart, originally recorded in the 1950s, but revived with animated visuals, complete with the audio crackling there, as you heard, for the 2013 film Extraordinary Tales. That rounds off our look at music from Edgar Allan Poe movies. People continue to adapt Poe for film, especially in the short film world. And there was even a movie that cast Poe as a detective hero, the 2012 film The Raven, with John Cusack as the wisecracking, hard-drinking author. But the less said about that misfire, the better. We'll leave off with some of Les Baxter's music from the 1960 film of House of Usher, with the hope that this session has conveyed some of the mood of adapting Edgar Allan Poe for the movies. You know, Poe wrote, "Believe nothing you hear and only half of what you see." But I hope you can believe a little of what you've heard during the last hour. I'm Robert Horton, and I thank you for listening to the music and the movies.